Is the state pullback on funding smoking cessation programs going to lead to more smoking and higher public health costs down the line? Dr. Abigail Halperin heads the Tobacco Studies Program at the University of Washington School of Public Health, and she joins us today from outside Boston. Dr. Halperin, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Nice to be here. Thanks.
So these cuts were to a program called the Tobacco Control Program and Quitline. Tell us a little bit about what that is.
So our state of Washington, for the last 10 years, or until about 2009, had one of the most robust tobacco prevention and control programs in the entire United States. All 50 states received funding in 1999 or so to create programs for the prevention and treatment of tobacco dependence and to help defray the cost to these states for treating tobacco-related diseases, which are extremely expensive and very widespread. Different states, the funds from this master settlement agreement were not earmarked specifically for anything because this was a deal with the tobacco industry, and of course they were hoping that we wouldn't spend much money on prevention and treatment because they would lose business. But some of the states, most states used at least a little bit of those funds, and we used a lot of our funds for that, and it was a huge success story. Our smoking prevalence in the state of Washington when our program began was right up there in about the middle of the prevalence among the U.S. states. We were about ranked 22nd. But after 10 years of our program, we had reduced smoking by 50% among youth and 25% among adults, and we became the third lowest prevalence rate in the entire country.
So there'd been a record of success here, but of course in the years since then, the state's faced a big financial crisis. It's kind of raided that tobacco settlement account for other purposes, and the latest funding cut, as I understand it, cuts the quit lines, and these are places that people could call if they wanted to quit and kind of be helped through that. According to one published report, there is now only going to be enough funding to keep to allow someone to call that quit line once. Is that enough for it to be effective?
Well, any treatment is effective. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize, unless they're smokers themselves or very close to a smoker, is that almost all smokers want to quit. National surveys by the CDC show that 90% of smokers wish they weren't smokers. 70% say they want to quit, and 50% try to quit every year. Yet less than 5% are able to quit on their own. With help, depending on how much help they can increase their chances of quitting by 2 to 10 times, up to 50% quit rate, which is huge. There's a pervasive myth among both smokers and non-smokers that smoking is a choice, and therefore quitting smoking is also a choice. But really, once people become addicted, that just isn't true for them anymore. And so in the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a huge evidence base built up through research funded by the National Cancer Institute and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, some of which was actually done here in Seattle at Group Health Cooperative, a lot of the research that showed that treatment with two components, a behavioral component to help people change their habits around their tobacco use, as well as a medication approach component that helps people deal with the withdrawal symptoms while they're trying to quit, makes a huge difference in helping them to succeed in quitting.
Dr. Halperin, as you mentioned, kind of a good success rate here, dropping to the third lowest smoking rate in the U.S. Do you expect that to reverse with the cutbacks in funding to the cessation programs, smoking cessation programs?
Oh, absolutely. We're already back to seventh place, and we're falling fast. It's very unfortunate because people are so really do want to quit, and the quit line we had in the past was extremely robust. It wasn't just a one-call program. Basically, everybody in the state for free could call, have unlimited calls to the state to the counselors who work at the quit line, who are highly trained to help people develop a quit plan, let them know how to use the medication to help deal with the withdrawal symptoms. And the more calls that they have, the more time they spend working through all their challenges in quitting from the behavioral point of view, the more likely they are to be able to stay quit long term.
Dr. Halpern, are we being penny wise and pound foolish here? Are we maybe saving some money on this program this year, but is that going to come back and hit us in coming years in public health costs because people continued to smoke and got cancer and then had to be taken care of?
Absolutely. For every person under 40 years old who quit smoking through the Quit Line, it adds not only 10 years to their life expectancy, it saves the state tens of thousands of dollars in health care costs. It's such a proven return on investment that it is a travesty, really, that we have taken this path.
Well, apparently not to the legislature. Dr. Abigail Halpern, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay.
She heads the Tobacco Studies Program at the University of Washington School of Public Health, commenting on a state pullback in funding for smoking cessation. You're listening to KUOW, Seattle.